Hello everyone and welcome to episode 6 of Conversations in the Park, a podcast developed by Y Mobility to chat about meaningful topics in a relaxed environment. So grab a drink and let's go. Today, episode on impact of mobility in smart cities is a sponsor for the IT Urban Mobility. And we are actually today as well surrounded by ladies. Today is one of the podcasts that we have more female speakers. And I'm really happy to say that it's the Day of Engineering Women as well. It's quite really good to actually see so many females in our panel. And as with me as well, we have Natalie Saber, our co-host as well. So Natalie, how are you doing? It's been a long time and we don't see you since the episode one.
I know, it has been. And I'm really glad to be back on here, David. Thank you.
And basically with us, Natalie, you can introduce our guests. It will be brilliant. So you just go ahead.
Sure thing. So I think for today's session, we are joined by Anna Clark. And Anna Clark has come from quite a really, really exciting background, obviously from quite sort of like a research background. Initially, she's obviously done her PhD in transportation. She worked at Polis for a while and then at Trifactor Traffic. And she's just recently joined IoT Woman. So really excited to be having her here. Next up is Mushka, who's joining us all the way from New York. She currently works at the World Economic Forum and also has a long history on all things from The Economist she worked at, and of course also has been doing a lot of sort of like professorship, which is quite exciting for sure. And then last but not least, we've got Augustine Friedel, who is quite well known on definitely the social media side. And he will talk to us from a corporate sustainability angle, but also sort of like touch base on some of the autonomous mobility side as well. So really, really excited. And I think, David, if you agree, I think we're going to have a really exciting next sort of like half an hour, 45 minutes, however long it's going to take us to kick things off. So I guess before we start into this exciting topic, I just sort of like wanted to, I guess, set the scene on the one hand and just sort of like provide us with a few stats that I've been collecting for this session today, such as, did you know that there are currently 250 million cars in the EU? And that's pretty much about one car for every two citizens. That's just crazy, right? Similarly, due to the lack of congestion in 2020, due to the global pandemic, drivers in the UK saved a staggering £613 million. It's a lot of money that we saved, which was obviously mostly done because we were staying at home and working from home a lot. Similarly, if we sort of like want to have a bit of a global perspective, the shared micromobility market in China, Europe, and the US could reach anywhere between $300 billion to $500 billion by 2030. And that's just insane in terms of the sheer size of it. And then last but not least, capital cities have the lowest rates of residents using cars. So there's a lot sort of like happening right now, especially in cities, but also in urban environments around mobility. And I think sort of like what better way to really start things off with, I guess, sort of like the first question. And that's really sort of like looking at what will the future of mobility look like in our cities? Or in fact, is future mobility already here? I mean, we're always sort of like talking about future mobility, but is it already present already? I mean, have we already reached everything that we ever wanted? Are we already there yet? And how does that all sort of like look upon? And I'm going to actually get the ball moving over to Augustine first, given that he's the gentleman in this room.
Thank you very much for this question. And I can only like echo David and Natalie. It's great to be here on the podcast with so many women. It's great to see that diversity and I really like it. And back to your question. So what is the future in urban areas? And yeah, is the future already there? I think it will be like even more diverse than we see it today. It will be also more tailored to the city than we see it today. I think that's pretty clear that the one-fits-all approach that Uber kicked off and then like the shared kick scooter providers kicked off to basically copy-paste the scheme from one city or even from one continent to another doesn't work. So there, like, it will be like, if you ask me, it will be a mix of like shared and personal mobility. And this is then tailored to the city. So depending on the population, on the size of the city, on the level of public transit, on the streets, policy making, etc. So this this will all shape the future of mobility. I personally hope that it's more like going towards active mobility. So bikes, e-bikes, and then also like smaller vehicles than like mopeds, for example, or kick scooters. I think that's these are like great vehicles for like moving around in urban environments. The car is not always the best one. So there, let's see where this goes. And it's electric.
Just a quick question, Augustine. Kick scooters, are those like the normal ones without electricity?
Yeah, the electric ones, like e-scooters. I think it's in Germany,
okay, so
they're like called kick scooters, but I think in the UK and the US, it's more like e-scooters. So that like Lime, Bird, and all the others are operating with those. Yeah.
Anna, what do you think? Are we there yet, or do we still have quite a bit of work to be done?
Yeah, I think, I would echo a lot of what Augustine is saying here, but I'm thinking I actually have no idea what the future is going to look like in terms of mobility. But what I do see is, and I work, you know, in the urban mobility. So I actually, my job is at EIT Urban Mobility, and I also work in EIT Women. But I'm working in this field of urban mobility, and there's this big move towards understanding what kind of cities we want in the future. And what it's going to be like. So I don't know what's going to happen in the mobility scene, but it's like in terms of I imagine it's going to be greener, it's going to be cleaner, it's going to be more quiet, it's going to provide us with what we want, and we're going to have spaces that are more livable. That's the trend that seems to be going. And exactly what the mobility solutions are, I don't know. I mean, we have this experience now with the e-scooters. I mean, 10 years ago in our field, we would not have predicted this, you know, and then it came and it's taken over. I mean, it's impossible to say what the next thing is. So it's a bit more like, okay, well, where do we want to go and what kind of thing do we want to have, and how do we get there? So it's a bit of a fluffy answer, I know. We'll discuss it some more though later on.
Oh, not at all. I mean, look, you already said all the right words. Augustine was obviously tending towards, you know, like active travel, which is great. You were mentioning all things green, and just the obviously green spaces. And I think that's really, really important, especially in some of the mega cities, which just are relatively grey. And I think that's a really nice segue into Mushka, because how's that happening over in the States? Give us a bit of an insight in terms of where do you see things going?
Hi, Natalie, and thank you, Natalie and David, for having us, for having me in particular. So a few words. First of all, I agree with Anna that we really have a work of imagination and creativity in front of us, and a responsibility to be bold in inventing the mobility of the future. I think that we need to think a little bit beyond modes and beyond products and services and make sure that that vision is very human-centric, that we go back to what people need and that we go back to the role that mobility plays in getting people access to key services and economic opportunity. And I think this is the only way that we will get to that future. In terms of business models, we are seeing a shift from an asset-based business model where you purchase a mobility solution to a service-based business model with mass, of course, mobility as a service, but more broadly, with just a different mindset around transportation, where it's less about I own a transportation solution and more about I need to make this trip from point A to point B, and then from point C to point F, and then back to point A. Our trips have become multimodal. We are making multiple of those a day. Yet the system that we have today still reflects a very patriarchal, traditional society where the main goal of transportation is to get to and from work in the morning and in the evening. And so in that sense, I think we have only scratched the surface of the level of innovation that we are going to see in mobility and transportation.
Now, we see that as you say, it's quite difficult to understand what is the future of mobility. What do you think is the next steps to achieve that particular adapting our cities to mobility, both things that we need to do to prepare ourselves, because we don't know what is the future, right? We need to design a system that basically it has some way to evolve. So what we need to do, you think, to actually prepare our cities to actually allow the citizens as well to enjoy these particular services and benefit for this particular service? But yes, I'm going to throw the question to Anna first.
Okay, yeah. What do we do to get sustainable mobility? You give me a tricky question there, but I think it's a lot to do with vision. I think vision is a really important part of this, that we can see where we want to go and that we build those visions in collaboration with many different actors. So collaboration is another thing I'm going to bring in there, that when we're creating solutions or companies or people who have ideas and create solutions, that we do that together, also with the cities, and so that we can develop things that can be implemented, and that we also test things and we try to push things in the right direction, and we're measuring all the time if we're going in the right direction. I think how do we get it in the right direction? It's a tricky one. Actually, I'm going to pass it on to Augustine.
What is the first step that we need to do? I always say that we need to stop things in small steps, right? Baby steps. So we want to go to that future of mobility want to actually make sure that we're providing a beneficial impact into the cities and to the regions. What should be the next steps, the baby steps that we need to do to understand that?
So yeah, I think it's the one trigger to move towards a more sustainable mobility. I don't think so. What I find very promising in baby steps also is these lighthouses we have, for example, across Europe. So there, I think the crucial part is that it's driven by individuals on city or public transit level, push really for like a sustainable setup. And I think the key part here that it needs to fit like the movements and like what's going on in the city. So that, as mentioned before, it needs to be tailored to the city, and it's need to be driven by enthusiastic persons in the markets. And I think that's a good start. And those examples could be used for like as lighthouses or like blueprints for like other cities. You can build a community around that, spread the word, and then basically, move from one city to the next one to go to a more sustainable setup then and future of mobility. And this takes a while because switching mobility modes and habits, it's nothing that's happening overnight. So normally you need important trigger until somebody is changing modes that are using mobility behaviors, like moving to another place, changing jobs, getting a baby, or then also what you see now during the pandemic. I think that was also like a major trigger for mobility shifts, maybe also in the wrong direction, because you see, okay, personal car ownership is picking up, at least here. The latest numbers I've seen from Berlin, it was going up, for Germany, for the German cities. I would imagine it's the same in other parts of the world. So like used car prices in the US and in Europe and anywhere else are going crazy. So I think this is, this also needs to be considered, but like the small like setups and smaller or like lighthouse cities, I think these are a good start to show, okay, that works. And then you need like the local people driving it, like enthusiastic people driving it, and that I have like really passion for that. This could be then like leading in the right direction.
I would add a few things as well. I think that, first of all, we need to consider the very manufacturing process of the products that we currently use. So when we talk about sustainability in particular, we talk a lot about EVs, for example, electric vehicles. There is a lot that can and should be done in terms of sustainability in advanced transportation as well, in the manufacturing process and then the recycling process of the vehicle. That's one thing. The second thing is we need to get to better global coordination. So continuing with the EV example, the EVs that we are seeing coming onto the US right now are going to be in Latin America in 10, 15 years, right? That obviously delays the revolution quite significantly for the Southern Hemisphere and then has huge consequences globally on climate change. So we need to find new processes for global cooperation and collaboration. Then third, we need to start again looking at a more human-centric view. And what's a little bit controversial about this is that it might mean having to step away from the usual suspects of the transportation landscape. I'm sorry, but I do include engineers and product designers in that, and starting to talk with the people who actually experience the consequences of people reaching their key destinations in different ways and with different levels of reliability and efficiency. The fourth point is that we need to go back to a human-centric view, and we need to reprioritize destinations. So at the risk of being controversial, it does mean starting to look beyond engineers, starting to look beyond product designers to design that future of mobility, and to start thinking through what end mobility really serves for people, for regions, and for countries, and then for the world. At large. So that means, for example, including social workers, it means including epidemiologists, heads of big ERs and hospitals around the world, heads of schools. But in short, it means reimagining coalition building around mobility innovation and going beyond the usual suspects that we currently include now, so that we have better international cooperation and better cross-functional cooperation, so that mobility can actually serve its purpose for people, for regions, for countries, and for the world.
So, what is your view on that approach? I mean, I'm interested to hear your views, Agustin and Anna, as well, in the human-centric part of the.
I actually don't think it's at all controversial to say that we need to involve beyond the usual suspects. I think, you know, the usual suspects have kind of got us. I mean, it's kind of been identified now that part of the problem we have is that if we've had engineers who are designing solutions, then it's like, you know, it's like the classic thing with building roads. So you build a road and then you get congestion on the road, and then what's the solution? You build another road. Well, we know now that if you do that, you induce traffic, because if you think outside of the engineering box, you have to think of, okay, well, how will people react? What are people going to do? You build a road, you get more capacity, you make it easier to drive on the road, and that makes more people want to drive. And that's another perspective you're bringing into it. And I think it's one of the clear examples that we've kind of accepted now. Actually, we can't just do this with engineers. We need lots of other disciplines in the field to understand how things are going to be used. So I would say it's not controversial, and it's very needed. And we still do have to go some way to get there, to bring in the different perspectives, but also look at how we can do that. How do we bring in different perspectives in this in the best way? And then when we talk about innovation, there's innovation in those corporation models as well. So it's new ways to work with the different models and think of how we design things together, how we build things together, and to bring in this diversity of perspectives and different ways of thinking things. So I'm totally agree with Butchka on this. Fantastic.
And I guess just to sort of like put that into a bit more of a sort of like real life example, Anna, because I, again, totally agree with you as well. I mean, we've seen it here, especially in the UK, also sort of like post and during COVID, when everyone was mandated to work from home and people were obviously reverting back to active travel a lot more. And there was a lot more people on bicycles out. And what the government was, and also local authorities, were basically saying, look, we need to react to this right now. People want to be more on their bicycles. We're basically going to open up all of these cycling infrastructure, pop-up lanes and whatnot. And they thought they were giving the people, the citizens, what they wanted. But ultimately, it actually resulted in a massive backlash. So there was lots of money invested towards all of this pop-up cycling infrastructure. But it actually turned out that it wasn't quite thought through. So it was pretty much what you were saying, you know, like just there's a problem. We need to put another solution on top of it without really understanding what was happening. And then people started to obviously revolt. They started to remove the barriers. And then the government had to retract some of the initial things backwards. So I feel like we are almost sort of like in every city is pretty much the same. We're almost confined to that limited space. And us trying to sort of like break free from these boundaries is incredibly difficult unless we start from ground zero. But we'll never be able to do that because we have to sort of like start working from, you know, like what we have right now in the cities. And I think that's quite an interesting way of looking at it, but also trying to break free from that, which is really tough. And I think totally agree with you, Anna. And it also relates back to what Augustine mentioned earlier on. So
yeah, maybe two sentences or 2 points from my side. So I fully agree on the user-centric side. I think there, especially if it comes to like mobility as a service, mass solution platforms, I think we need to get better there. It was like often technical driven to show, okay, it's possible, but leaving the user, the consumer out, I think that's key, or that would be important for me. And I would find interesting to focus more there on the user and then be more user centric basically. And then the second part was, okay, collaboration and who should steer it. I'm a big supporter of these kinds of like grassroots initiatives and startups. So like the radical approaches, to get to innovation in urban mobility and urban transportation. I think where we need to get better, like all stakeholders involved, is then on like increasing the awareness and the like openness for collaboration. I think that's where we are lacking a bit on like city level, but also on operator level, that they don't join forces. They are more like fighting against each other. I think that's something where we can get better to have then like a more sustainable, more accessible mobility ecosystem than in the different urban areas. And that's like going into the direction of like service providers to open up for like partnerships with cities, with public transit authorities, with other organizations in like on city or federal level, but also the other way around, that like cities and policymakers, that they're also open for these kinds of new innovations and then collaborate there. And I think it's as we're starting something new there with like the pop-up bike lanes. I mean, that's something that was never been explored before. And also like micromobility is quite new. I mean, there we also need to consider that these are areas where we learn and then improve the services and the setup. I mean, if you do some research and go back to the beginning of the car and how like traffic or situations in cities has been there, I think it was also not perfect from one day to another. So it's very encouraging to see that it's improving basically month by month. You get more hardware, you get better collaboration, you get like more infrastructure and more understanding of both sides, like policymakers, cities, but also like operators, more user-centric approaches. So I'm quite optimistic that we're moving there in the right direction, but it takes time and it takes openness from all parties involved.
I think both of you touched on an important point here, that when we're talking about urban mobility, the local conditions are extremely important. So you've taken up this example, Natalie, that the pop-up bike lanes didn't work. But in many cases, they did. In other cities, they did. And they're really taken up as a good example. Here's something we can put in these temporary bike lanes, and then we can make them permanent. And then we're actually reallocating public space from cars to bicycle to active mobility, which is fantastic. It's in line with the city goals. It's the direction we want to go in. And that's been done because of the pandemic. And it's the same thing with the electric scooters and shared mobility offers. They need to be adapted to the local circumstances. And this is, it's so important in this area, and the local circumstances and the cultures within the cities. And that's going to make a difference at how these things are accepted. And that's the culture within, you know, the people living in the city. The different countries have different cultures, but also different organizations have cultures. And you think of the city authorities, even within the same country, two different city authorities may have a completely different culture when it comes to innovation and taking advantage of new opportunities. So it's a good point that you bring up there.
And it was a little bit, I mean, Anna, with what you're saying, I was going in the similar direction, because we were talking about the future of mobility. I actually want to turn the question a little bit the other way around. It says, are the cities ready? So basically, as you said, with a lot of innovation coming in and the celebration to it, is like, are the cities ready and know what they need to do and how they need to do it? Or they need some support or help to actually do it? Or they need to actually be more collaboration between cities to understanding basically, hey, these guys, for example, I don't know, hey, in New York is doing something that is working, and then we can bring it to Europe, or whatever the thing they're doing in Berlin, basically can bring it to Spain. Is that collaboration in terms of I'm an engineer, so I don't like to reinvent the wheels, right? So basically, is that collaboration happening, or is that that guidance to cities to understanding how is the best way to do it there? Is I want to see your views as well on that one as well. Muska, let's start with you.
So that was actually what I was going to pick up from what Anna just and Augustine and Natalie just talked about in terms of like the local versus global tension. I think that if there is one thing that is more globally applicable where we have more to exchange internationally, it's not as much on the decisions themselves, right? Like, do we add a pop-up backlane or not? But on the decision-making process. And I think that there is actually a lot to learn from each other and a lot of issues that we are seeing at the World Economic Forum really across the world. So we have a problem globally, for example, that we call the data gap as part of the Inclusivity Quotient Project. And the issue is pretty simple. It is that the data collection and operationalization processes that we around the world, essentially prioritize a very specific population around that world. And therefore, when we get to the level of insights, of actionable insights, we have missed big parts of the populations, generally the underserved parts of the populations. Wherever you are, they might be different, but it's always the same dynamic. And so there is a lot to learn just in terms of how data gets collected, how data gets processed, and then how actionable insights get generated from that data, especially as we keep moving towards a data-driven decision-making process. So that, to me, would be the biggest opportunity for global cooperation. And then I think the second thing that is related is that around the world, we're looking at the digitization of the urban space. And there, too, there are actually many lessons that are applicable broadly, and they relate to coalition building, they relate to partnership building, they relate to public-private partnerships. And yes, there will be differences in terms of culture and sometimes legalities of how these things can get done in different countries. But by and large, we have found that there is a lot to learn from each other. And the last thing I'll say is that actually in those cultural differences, there are big lessons. So for example, right now, we are doing a project with the Boston Consulting Group that is in Chicago in the US and also in Berlin in Europe. And we are seeing contradictory data between Chicago and Berlin. But that those contradictions are where I think a lot of the lessons are. And I think that those contradictions are where we can extract insights that can be more broadly applied.
I was thinking, what is your view on that?
Yeah, I agree on the data part. So I think that it's important to also like broaden basically the data pool. I mean, at the moment, there's a lot of discussion about like shared mobility providers sharing the data with the cities. So ride-hailing companies like Uber or Freenow or like the kick scooter players like across the world, they are forced to share the data. I think it's to get to like a holistic picture per city. And that's different, as Muska mentioned, from market to market, from country to country, like also like city to city level. So to get to that, like a holistic picture, cities need to combine multiple data sources about like traffic flow, also logistics, and so on, to have like a good view of what's going on in the city. The tools are there. Cities need to be open to get maybe external support on data collection, data fusion, also then decision making or like suggestion making for decisions. I think they are like maybe there's a bit more openness needed on city level to learn and to also, I think it's also clear that they don't get it right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be also a bit of tolerance then maybe from everyone involved that it takes time. But yeah, and there I see like different levels. Yeah, some cities are really engaged in getting the learnings out of the data, like Hamburg, for example, that are open for shared mobility and new mobility options. Then other cities like Berlin, for example, they basically don't care what's going on in the city. Then you have like also smaller towns and cities that are also like very enthusiastic behind in like optimizing or improving the situation in their markets. So I think it's a mix across the world. And I think they talk to each other. Most of them are eager to learn. And I think that's the right way forward.
But I think we can all agree that, especially with COVID, this has only really sort of like accelerated that process of sharing data. I think previously, and again, I mean, keen to get your views on this, but previously companies might have potentially been a little bit more protective about sharing data. But I think now with the urge of, knowing what's happening, sort of like understanding people's movement on the one hand, transportation movement and also capacity in terms of that, that's sort of like accelerated to a certain pathway, I think, which was quite good. And at the same time, I think we've also sort of like gone through a bit of a, don't want to say it's something negative, but a bit of a cleanse, a mobility cleanse in terms of, I mean, some companies were hit extremely hard and others were really sort of like thriving and really, and I think we've seen it obviously with the e-scooters on the one hand, but also with shared bikes. They've obviously kicked off in some cities where they weren't before because of the need being there quite well. So I think in all things considered, this has only sort of like further propelled us to going that forward. I think I've got a question though, and then sort of like a bit of a curveball. We're obviously talking about different mobility modes and what have you not, but I'm wondering is there discussion to be had about good mobility versus bad mobility in cities and how that impacts citizens? And I'll give you an example just sort of like to kick things off. Obviously with, I'm coming back to bicycles for whatever reason, I'm kind of obsessed with bicycles at the moment.
You have a car?
But it is obviously, we've seen it in China, one of the sort of like the first early adopters on the electric bicycles. And if any of you have been to China, you can see that streets are literally littered with mountains of discarded bicycles because the companies are basically putting them on the streets and they don't really collect them if anything is wrong with them because it's just not worth their money. It's obviously a lot cheaper just to keep putting new cycles on bicycles on the street. And we've had some similar conversations or happenings, I guess, here as well. From a UK perspective, the shared cycling scheme works extremely well in some of the cities such as London and Birmingham. And it really doesn't work in Manchester, for example. And we've already previously touched upon a bit of a cultural differences as well. But of course, there's also a bit of a safety issue, which we haven't really touched upon yet. And again, back to e-scooters, and how do we sort of like integrate them into the modern day transportation? Where can they drive? Is it safe for people to be on these e-scooters without a helmet? Do they need to have a speed limit? And how do we make them inclusively access for everything? So just sort of like keen to get some viewpoints from that. Anna?
I mean, you started there with the question of, is there good mobility or bad mobility? And I in a way, I kind of think it's the wrong question because mobility in itself, it's just our way of getting round. And the question is more, are we using the right modes of transport or ways of getting round to get to what we want to get to? If we're talking about bad and good, then you have to say that cars in urban areas, not great, right? I mean, it's a space issue more than anything. If you just think of all of this space that we take up for cars in dense urban areas, I mean, we have urban areas so that we can have many things happening in the same place and many people living in the same place and services, etc. Dense areas, cars take up a lot of space. The average occupancy is 1.2 people per car. It's a lot of space for 1.2 people. So I would say that would be the bad. And when you get into the new kind of modes of transport or new ways of transporting, whether it's, electric, these bikes share systems or electric scooters or on the freight side, I mean, there's also a lot happening on the freight side, whether they're bad or good or not. I mean, we have to help when these new modes come in, those who are working with the planning and managing of the public space, how can we support that to go in the right direction? And then you can bring in new technologies on top of that. For example, with shared bicycle schemes, with geofencing, for example, where you're saying, well, you can park in this bit only. And you can't stop, you know, you can't stop the ride and stop paying unless you've got them parked in a specific area or you slow down the speeds or whatever. So, yeah, I'll pass it on to Agustin. I know he's got plenty of opinions on the shared mobility space.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like a reason for every different mode. I think there's also a reason to have like cars in urban areas. It's maybe the use case is not always right and the space and costs allocated to that. If I come back to the question of bad and good mobility and yeah, think about like shared mobility, there's maybe no good or bad related to like the mode, but maybe more towards like the execution and expansion. So you mentioned the bikes, yeah, O-Bike. I think they dropped overnight 7,000 bikes in a city like Munich where nobody was aware of that they are coming and they didn't know the company and they didn't know how to use it. So was this good execution? Maybe not. So was it more like bad execution. The same is like Uber. Was it the right move to like basically copy paste the US model to all the European cities? Yeah, with like ignoring the policies here, the regulations here, etc. Maybe also could be questioned if it was a good or like bad execution of like their service. And I think that's like the industry had done some mistakes there. They learned maybe some faster than others, but I would phrase it more than in this kind of like execution setup. And like per se, there's no, if you ask me, there's no good or bad mobility. There's a reason for every mode we have, also for like personal cars and trucks and so on. But then it's more like on the execution side. And also again, taking the point that Anna mentioned about like logistics and last mile delivery. I mean, that's kind of the same. Yeah, I see it also more like a execution problem or challenge there. Yeah, is it a good setup that the Amazon driver, or like three Amazon drivers, are coming to my house per day to deliver my three packages instead of one driver? Or is it the right vehicle that they go through like dense urban areas in Berlin with like the big ICE or diesel commercial vans? Or is there like a better mode? I think that's more like if you talk about shared mobility, logistics, last mile delivery, it's more like bad or good execution, but not there's, for me, there's no bad or good mobility.
Fair point. Always good. Mushka, any last words on this one?
No, I completely agree with Augustin. I really don't believe in a good or a bad mobility. I believe that there is a mode and a service and a technology for each trip and each person. And I am personally careful not to demonize any mode. I do believe that it's about execution, and beyond that, it's about deployment. And about public-private partnerships oftentimes. So I think that we need to better equip our cities, since we're talking about cities, to really understand the whole spectrum of products, services, and technologies, and to learn to help them work together in a more seamless, more connected way so we can create a truly multimodal system, right, and not multiple modes all together in the same place.
And I feel like I'm being hit there a bit with like, when you say you don't want to demonize any particular mode, and maybe you think that I'm demonizing cars. I'm just saying that very often they're not the best way of getting around. And we have, and I also wonder if we didn't have cars today and they were the new mobility mode, what would we be saying about them coming into our cities? Imagine we had cities that only had cycling and walking and public transport. And then someone had this invention, which was a private car. It's huge. On average, 1.2 people travel in it. What would we say about that coming to our cities? What do you reckon?
Yeah, fully agree. I think that's one of the key parts there. I mean, they're like the novelty of the scooters, and then they're on the sidewalks where like everybody is walking and passing by. I mean, I think that's like a big reason. I guess again, if you look back in history and say, okay, what happened when like the car were introduced in the streets? Yeah, maybe the people had the kind of same discussions. maybe it was not that obvious as today, because there was no like social media and internet where they could spread all like their hate stories and news, etc. So I think, but I would assume that they had the same discussion that we had today or have today with like new mobility. We need to get used to it, and we need to be open to it to make this a part of our day-to-day mobility. I think I mentioned it. It takes time. Yeah, it takes time until people adopt the new modes. They get used to it. It also takes time until the setup in the cities is like optimized. Yeah, they need to figure out what is the best vehicle. Technology, what is the where do they need to deploy it, how do they need to link it, or do they link it to like public transit and other modes of transport. I mean, there's a lot of activity going on, and we are moving forward, and it just takes time. And Natalie also asked about the security and safety part of kick scooters. I mean, look at what like all the providers or operators built into their scooters. It's like insane. I mean, imagine if you would have this level of location or like preciseness and detection on autos, yeah, or cars. Yeah, like, I mean, they track, is the scooter like parked correctly? Is they limit the speed of the scooter in certain areas? They have like pedestrian detection. They have like sidewalk detection. They link it to the phone, like for emergency calls, if there's an accident, etc. Yeah, I mean, that's insane what they put there in technology, and use this maybe also for like public policy reasons. But imagine if we would have this kind of level on cars and trucks. I mean, there we would be maybe closer to like Vision Zero than we are today. That's all around this little small like bikes and kick scooters. Yeah, it's also to put this a bit in perspective there.
And the crazy thing really is that, I mean, this technology obviously exists for cars as well, and it's just the case that we don't implement it because it's not new. So it's when something new is implemented, then you question it in a different way. But we've got used to cars being around, so then we build things around them instead. And then I think of you saying, you know, what happened when the cars were introduced. I mean, I've heard that there was a lot of complaints for horse and carriage owners at the time. That they were like, no, don't introduce these. It's going to be the death of the horse and carriage industry. And what are we going to do with all these horses? So
I think there are a few assumptions here that are being made that are just like pretty big. Like the first one is that it's the same model to use a scooter or a bike that's being tracked and strategically deployed as it is for a car. A car right now is mostly generally owned, not rented for one trip or as a service. So to track it and to have very intense regulations about where, how to use it and where to park it is just a very different proposition. That's one thing. The second thing is, yes, of course, every time that there is new technologies, there is a very, you have a lot of people from the previous industries who kick and shout. But in this case, the other big assumption that's being made is that car would have been introduced as a new technology once everything else would have been optimized to actually allow the movement of people around the urban environment. And that I have a lot of difficulty believing with the current product, services, and modes that we have. We would need a very different system to be able to not need cars. And the reason why I say that is not because I love cars or because I work for an OEM. It is because I'm a mom. And I have two young kids and I'm pregnant with my third. And I live in a country that's very cold in the winter, very hot in the summer. And I actually only got my driver's license when I was 30 years old. I resisted for a really, really long time. I grew up in Paris and then I was in New York. So I always was able to use the public transit system and whatever was available to me as a single woman or as a newly married woman or whatnot. With kids, the situation is completely different. And I have done the thing where I go to the grocery store and then I carry my dozens of bags by myself in the subway, up and down the stairs. And so what? I was young, I was physically able, I could do it. But then I would see, you know, the little grandma, you know, in the middle of the Upper West Side, who just waits for someone to do that for her, right? And then if she doesn't have someone to do it for her, she can't take the train up the 12 blocks to her apartment. She definitely can't ride a scooter, right? She definitely doesn't have another alternative. So now my car is basically just car seats. It's car seats and grocery bags. And I use it to get to the train so I can then get to work for my own use. And that is it. But if I didn't take it to the train, my commute from house to train would go from 3.5 minutes to over 30 minutes. It's time I don't have. And so we just have not found the alternatives and the replacement to allow people to potentially stop using their car. It's not here. And as someone who was very anti-car as a young woman and waited so long to get my driver's license and I got mocked mercilessly for it, it was a liberation when I got my car. And I think that for a lot of people, that's what a car is. It's freedom. And so we need to figure out a mobility mode or product that equates freedom in the exact same way.
I think, Muske, you're on the right point. Sorry to interrupt, Anna. I think you're on the right point. Mobility as a whole is freedom, right? And moving as a human, moving from point A to point B, it is about freedom. And as we said before, I think we need to actually use whatever is actually make us free, right? With depending of our age and our situation and our cultural environment as well. So I think not that it's nothing good or bad. I think it's just basically, it's a lot of different alternatives to move. And Anna, I'm going to give you yes, because I know that you want to say something. So basically I'm going to leave you the voice.
Okay. Yeah. I have to say something. I also have two kids, of course. And I actually have just got my first car, but it's actually a shared car with my in-laws. I don't use it for day-to-day at all. I do all of the grocery shopping and all of the delivering of my children to school and activities and everything else, not by car. And that's because I live somewhere that has had very strong policies to support different modes of transport other than the car. Outside my children's school and preschool, there are, you know, if you're driving, it's a little bit difficult, but if you cycle, you can go right next there. And my children get to cycle, it's better for them, it's better for me, it's better for society. And I just, you know, I'm not saying this because everybody has this choice, but it's the choice of the city that I lived in to make it possible for me to do that. It's not because of me. It's because of the city has made me able to do that. And that's what I'm saying. It's thinking about a different way to do things. So when I'm saying we can think about a different way for our cities to be and design it in a different way that allows for different choices of people.
And I think that's a really good example of what we discussed before, that it was basically the behavior impact on different environments. Right, and that's a good example. It's just two different examples that basically, the depending on the environment that we have, you have different type of mobility requirements, right? That is in the framework. And I think this have been a brilliant conversation, right? And I would love to keep talking with you for another 2-3 hours, right? But I think we're coming to an end of the podcast, and I always like to finish the podcast with a little bit of like a hope or spirit. Right. So I just want to ask you if you need to give me in your own words, basically, what will be your desired city on the next 10 years?
What would be my desired city? So I hope that like Paris is following through with like all the great initiatives they kicked off, like they're basically 15 minutes neighborhoods and what they have announced there on like closing streets in the city center for like cars, etc., shape a like more sustainable, more active mobility, like centric city. So that's my hope, that they really follow through, and then that other mega cities in Europe and across the world will follow this example to get to more like greener and livable cities, to basically circle back what Anna and Muska said at the beginning, where we see the future. So that's my hope.
Anna, what is your desired city or in the next 10 years?
It's very much the same. I think it's nice to think of it if you close your eyes and you try and think of what you smell and you hear. I think that's a nice way to imagine what the desired future is. So it's not necessary, don't necessarily have to think of what transport is involved in that, but it's going to be a fresh, nice place, and it's probably quite quiet, and probably you can hear birdsong. So I think, but sometimes it can be full of people, but probably not so much the traffic sounds.
Mushka, what is your...
My mushy hope, you know, is to see...
Is to see
a city that's just more human, you know, and that privileges destinations over technologies, that makes sure that those are spread out evenly and equitably, that thinks beyond just job distances, for example, in terms of economic development, but really places the human first and understand the diversity of what that word actually means. So that's the vision.
I mean, I hope I'm going to write all of those, right? And hopefully we are around in 10 years. I'm going to send it to you to see if we actually achieve as humans, right? Having a city that is human, that is male, and you can listen, and then can actually be used multimodal transportation and cars as well in the cities to actually our best use. So with all this, thank you very much, Natalie, for actually helping to co-host, Mushka, Anna, and Agustin for attending to the podcast. It was a great conversation. And I hope that all our audience like the conversation. This is the Conversations in the Park. Thank you to the IIT for sponsoring this particular section. And I hope I can see listen all of you in the future, right? See as well if we can meet in person at some point. And keep following our podcast in Conversations in the Park. Thank you very much.